Two. Hey everyone, and welcome back to The Advisor. My name is Lisa Urbanski, co-host of the show, joined by George Haymaker. I just want to say a quick shout out to Spreaker and iHeartRadio for your sponsorship. Thank you, and to our audience, please do not forget to like and subscribe. Have you guys ever thought about this? I know I think about it a lot. I used to until I really went down the path that we're going to talk about today, and George is an expert in. Are we our minds? What is our relationship with our brain? Does the brain steal the show, or do we lead our brain? Are we our minds? Is change possible? How do we change? Why does it feel like everything is so hard that we try and change? And how does our brain produce our mental experiences, like those thoughts, feelings, and behaviors? And what are some of the things that we can do if we don't like it? So, joined with me today is George Haymaker, who is a former entrepreneur who's gone through a hell of a lot, battling things like alcoholism, a pain pill addiction, anxiety, low self-esteem, and the mind, which often felt like his own worst enemy. He is here today. He's a brain science educator and coach, and he's going to talk to us about just that, our relationship with the brain. It's really good to see you again, George. You mentioned it's Friday, because we see each other on Fridays, and we partied Friday.
That's right. It must be Friday. It's great to see you again. And yeah, it's a once a week occurrence with us. So we're building a nice relationship here on the air. Thank you for having me again.
And we delayed part two of my through your program. We're putting me through your program, but that's delayed, and we're gonna probably shoot for that next week. So if you guys were waiting for that, it's coming. But this today is more important, in my opinion. So what do you think? Are we our brain?
Well, sometimes it feels like it, doesn't it?
Oh God, yes.
Yeah, we can get overwhelmed by what's going on in our minds quite easily. Yeah, that's what I had to find out the hard way, as I've mentioned in the past, with my own struggles. And it turns out we're not. The brain is there to serve us and to be our partners in life. And thank God it's forgiving and willing to change, and it's malleable and formable and adaptable. The key, though, the key to the kingdom is, figuring out how to work with the brain and its functionality to guide it in the change process. And so the brain is a follower, it's not a leader. So it does not, just create our mental life and activities out of nowhere. We've actually trained it over our lifetimes to think, feel, and behave the way it does, with all the experiences that, we've ever had in our lives. And so, yeah, and so that's if that's really how our, mental life and our relationship with our brains work. So what I encourage people to do is, to understand that, be aware of it, first of all, that we are meant to be partners. We're not adversaries. One is not in charge of the other. It's meant to be a collaboration of sorts. The brain has needs, and it's more than willing to serve our needs, but we have to serve its needs in order for it to deliver the outcomes that we want in our lives. And, we're only going to Our mind is only going to give us what we put into it. And so we have to take the lead if we want things to be different.
I know when I was a kid, if I saw my parents had this, they loved unsolved mysteries, and it was terrifying because it would show crimes and stuff like that, the music. And every time I would watch it, I would have nightmares every single time. So now I know that stuff like that affects my mind. So I stray away from it. I mean, we're putting crap in our brain all day long on these phones. Like it's just stuff that is creating these patterns, making us react. Why does that happen? Like, how does that work? You see something, you're triggered. Like, how does the brain work?
Yeah, so it's muscle memory. And we're building these patterns, which are like, going to the gym and building muscles all day, every day with everything that enters into our minds. And the more times that we repetition a specific pattern, the stronger and more ingrained that it gets. So I think on our show previously, we've likened it to a plant or a tree that, we keep fertilizing and watering. And every time we do that, obviously the roots get stronger and deeper and more ingrained. The neural pathways or the patterns are actually neural pathways in the brain. So we have 85 billion neurons in our brain, which are the cells, and they s form strings, like Christmas light strings. And depending on the pattern and the different parts of the brain that are involved in that pattern or that experience, it will, string from one part of the brain to another, representing that pattern. And so, the more times that you repetition it, relive, re-engage in a certain thought, feeling, or behavior, or sometimes all three that are entwined together, that pattern gets stronger. So it's like, doing reps at the gym. And especially if there's a high level of emotional attachment to that pattern, like you're emotionally activated, emotion is like extra potent fertilizer, so it makes the pattern even stronger and stronger. So if we're traumatized or somebody triggers us, and we react with emotion, those patterns tend to be the strongest and most ingrained because they are the most relevant to us because they've triggered emotion. They have the most meaning. In some cases, if they're threatening, our brain is its number one job is to guard against threats. And so again, we just have these like roadmaps of different patterns running all around our brain. And that's how they develop is through repetition over and over again. And so, if we are in a point in our lives where we're getting mental reoccurrence of certain things that are happening over and over again, it's because we've strengthened them. And they are really these really strong root systems in our brain that if we want to change, we have to figure out how to weaken those and replace them with a different pattern that's more in line with how we want to think, feel, and behave in these in a particular situation.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to that. When I was going through addiction, it's like substances made my brain feel good. I told myself that if I took something, it would make me feel good, right? So it's like I cemented that idea that I needed something to feel good. It's just like anything. And then when it like was time to, okay, I got to get my shit together here and pick myself up so I can help the world. But it's like, why was it so hard for me when I started wanting to change? What was going on in my brain?
Yeah, well, I don't know how many times that you reenacted that pattern of
Oh,
doing
a
drugs,
ton.
but
Probably a lot more than you could ever imagine.
Well, I know I did. And so, that whole idea around doing drugs to relieve discomfort, where there's an emotional component, right? Because if I know in my case, like I would do drugs in response to being tired, being anxious, being stressed out, all of those things. So it's really a pattern that links, mental, cognitive, and emotional discourse or discomfort with we've chosen instead of processing that, we chose to cope with it by using substances. So now we've linked, the thoughts that come along with stress and anxiety, with the emotions, with the behavior that involves coping with drugs and alcohol. So you can see it's a really entwined pattern That
Wow.
includes, unhealthy behavior, unhealthy thoughts, unhealthy emotions. And we did it over and over and over and over and over again. And because we did it so many times, and it was, it provided our brain reward and relief when we needed it, because, we don't like the discomfort, it became very important to us. And so the brain got really used to that pattern as to what it would predict for us to want to do every time that we felt any trigger like stress or whatever triggered us to want to do drugs. That whole pattern reemerged in our brain. And that was the solution that, because we taught it that, that's the solution that the brain reached into our memory banks and pulled out and presented to us, saying that, well, the last time and the zillion times before that, that you felt this way and thought this way, you did drugs. And so here you go. Here's your solution again,
Wow.
because it worked the last time. And so that's what these re and so in your brain, there are these neurons that are connected together, running from different parts of your brain that represent that pattern I just laid out. And it lights up every time that that trigger happens. And the brain then chooses it because it's the most meaningful, relevant one that's worked the best in the past, as far as it knows, because you haven't showed it anything different. And then it pres and it mer that thought, that pattern emerges into your brain as the solution that the brain is bringing forward to you. It's called prediction. And that's the one that comes into your consciousness. And so that will happen over and over and over again in the future until you decide it's time that, this is no longer helping me. I have to do something different. And you take the steps to replace that pattern with something different.
Yeah, I mean, it was so ingrained in my brain that those light strings that you talk about were probably more like a totem pole. Like they were established so much so that around the time every day that I would use, I would start reacting in my body. Like the brain, like my body was saying, "Oh my God, you're about to get your fix," in a sense. And so my body started reacting around that time of day. And so when I changed that behavior and started down that path, God, that was so hard. It was like I had to take different drives home, like seriously, like 30-minute detours to avoid the same drive because it was like repatterning, like you said. It's like you have to do it a new way. So, why does it feel so hard? What is our brain doing when we're trying to change? Why does it feel so hard? Why was it so hard for me to take that opposite drive home? I know it would have been really easy to go use, but I took the opposite way. But what was going on in my brain when I decided to say, you know what? No, 30-minute detour. I don't care. I'm not using anymore.
Yeah, so that just goes to show you all that's involved in these patterns. So, it's not just the thoughts, it's not just the emotions, it's not just the drug, it's all the ritual around it, the pathway that you would drive, the location that you lived in, the time of day. It's like the whole thing is mapped out, right? And then your brain starts to look for certain cues, like the time of the day or a certain route that you're taking, and then it triggers it. That's a trigger. And so, drugs and alcohol make it even harder to change. I mean, changing, a normal habit is hard enough. But when you introduce drugs and alcohol to it, the additional factor that you're dealing with is that those substances deliver so much more reward in the form of dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter, neurochemical that drives motivation to do things. There's so much more that we get dopamine that we get from drugs and alcohol than we do from any other form of life, normal life activity, that the brain wants, it needs something equally as rewarding, or something that we can convince it will be as equally rewarding or more rewarding in order to want to switch, because the brain is geared to pursuing reward. And so, if we are putting options in front of it that aren't, that the brain doesn't feel are as rewarding because it's getting so much dopamine from the drugs and alcohol, It's not going to want to do it. And so it resists. In addition to that, the brain is in charge of, conserving energy and predicting, your mental life with as little effort as possible, because it needs to conserve resources to help protect and keep you safe. That's really its job. And so, in doing that, it doesn't really want to consider other alternatives that it doesn't know about, that it hasn't learned yet, because it will require it to think harder about it. It will require something new and different, and that requires higher levels of cognitive resource, so more energy. And it doesn't want to expend it. It just would rather go get something that it already knows about in its memory bank and bring it to you, because it's familiar. It knows you're going to probably live through it because you haven't died yet. And so it's just easy for it to go and grab a previous memory and present it to your mind in consciousness than it is to come along with you and have to learn something completely new that it has no idea and doesn't believe that it's going to be as rewarding as the drugs and alcohol have been that you've been giving it to it, because it's been experiencing how rewarding that is. And so it's a really hard sell to get your brain to want to do anything new and different, no matter what. It's really hard, even harder when the drugs and alcohol are involved. So that's what you experienced, and that's why it felt hard, is because the brain is resisting.
Yeah, I mean, the brain almost seems really lazy. It wants to take the easy way out.
Yeah, it does, but remember this, that the brain is on 24/7. So even
Yeah.
when you're sleeping, the brain is still working on doing a number of different functions, such as taking everything that you've learned from that day in short-term memory and moving it to long-term memory. It's also pruning all of your neurons that you're no longer using. It's getting the toxins out of your brain. It's doing a lot of work while even while you're sleeping. And so that little 3-pound organ in your head, is consuming 25% of all your calories. And so, we call it lazy, but it's got a lot of work to do, and it's always on. And you are only privy to the amount of it that is in your consciousness. And so while you and I are talking, your brain is scanning your environment, and you're not even aware of it. You're listening to things, you're seeing things. It's working. It's called the ventral attention network, and it is scanning the environment looking for threats, and you're not even aware of it. And it's taking in all that information through your senses, and if something was threatening there, it would immediately switch its attention over to it and away from me and what we're doing right now, because that would take precedent. Your life would be under threat. It wouldn't care about what you and I are doing. It would care about what that threat is. And so, the brain's working pretty hard. Is so it's not lazy. It's actually work, but in order to in be, because its mental resources are finite in a particular day until we reset them with good nutrition, good sleep, good exercise, et cetera. It's constantly spending these resources, so it wants to conserve them, right? Because it doesn't want to like burn out by 1 p.m. It wants to like try to ration the resources out so it can be efficient all day long. So that's why it wants to quote unquote, be lazy in your words. It just wants to conserve and take the easy way because it knows it's got a lot more work to do.
Yeah. Well, I can I last podcast I was recording, I'm in a basement office and our cat like popped his head in the window, scared the living crap out of me. So I did exactly that. I looked away. I looked up at the window. I was like, "What the heck is going on?" And then I was able to draw my attention back. So it, my brain noticed that immediately. Like it was like, and I was like, "I'm okay. I'm not dying. This isn't a tiger. It's just tequila, and he's outside. You're fine." So I went through that whole process of the distraction, and then my brain checking out. checking to make sure I was safe and then checking back in. But I did it without saying anything.
So that all happened in a very split second, and you actually noticed the cat before it popped into your consciousness. So your brain actually, part of your brain, that you have two different attention networks, the one that's paying attention and consciousness to what we're doing, and then another one that's scanning the world around you, looking for problems. And so that part of your brain detected that cat before you even realized it. And then it said, this is important. So I need to alert Lisa of this. And so it was brought into your consciousness.
I love how you said that because we are not our brains. We are not our minds. You just said your brain alerted Lisa about tequila, which is not alcohol. It's our cat's name. But yes, because so many people, they get trapped in these patterns and they're anxious and depressed and they my mind is telling me this, you know, and they listen to that. But we are not our minds. Can you speak on that?
Yeah, the brains, we are not our minds. Our minds are us, in the sense that everything that is appearing in your mind, you put there. Okay, you trained it. So it's like you trained your dog to bark, and then your dog is barking. Don't be surprised that your dog is barking,
Right.
right? And so okay, and so we've trained our brains in certain ways based on how we've thought, felt, and behaved in the past. And granted, there's a lot of outside influences that we're dealing with. And in those times, like let's say that we were brought up in a difficult upbringing. And so we didn't ask for that, but it happened. And so we thought, felt, and behaved in certain ways to survive at that time, based on what we thought was best at the time. And, that may have not been healthy or helpful at the time, but that's what it was. And so we have trained our brains in certain ways to get through life. And so the brain is simply a reflection and a record keeping, like a trained animal, of all the things that we've ever trained it to do. And so, the good news is, again, that the brain is trainable. It's changeable and adaptable. So the same way that we've trained it to this point, we can try to, we can train it to do different things. And it can forget and move on from unhelpful things and learn new and more helpful things to replace the unhelpful things. Okay. But it takes us to initiate that change. The brain won't do it for us. We have to go through a process to replace and supplant unhelpful things with helpful things.
And that's not easy to do. So we speak on consciousness. So I mean things like meditation and all of that, we're expanding our consciousness. So when we're doing those things, does that mean we're actually using more of our brain?
Well, meditation, mindfulness, are great activities for training the brain. So for example, I know that, we talked in one of our sessions about multitasking and distractions and like juggling multiple things at the same time. And like we're doing something and our phone goes off and we check our phone and this and that. So that's all. When you get distracted and you multitask and you're just like from one thing to the next, and you get frustrated because you can't focus and concentrate, you've trained your brain to do that. So the more times that you multitask and flit from one thing to the next, you've trained your brain to do that. You've created neural pathways around that. So when we practice mindfulness and attention exercises, we're actually training our brain to do the opposite. So that's a process of training it to pay attention, training it to focus. And then, so you can just picture yourself meditating, you're consciously focused on one thing, your mind drifts, you bring it back. Something enters your mind, you let it pass by and you bring it back to your focal point. So if you do that every day, you are actually training attention and focus into your brain, expanding that capability, building that muscle, and you are then able to, you'll notice over time as you build that muscle, that you are better at it. And your brain will automatically stay there in focus instead of becoming distracted because you are practicing attention, not practicing multitasking. And so that's a great example of replacing an unhelpful pattern with a helpful one.
I love that. When I started meditating, I wasn't able to read a book in public. Like I had this desire to go to Starbucks and read a book. So I saw all these cool looking people reading their books in Starbucks, and I'm like, I want to be one of these people. And I would go there and I'd open my book, and I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't read a single line without being distracted by all the things, all the people, all the coffee, all the smells. And so I started doing a form of meditation. And within a week, I was able to sit in Starbucks and read a page of that book without being distracted. It was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, there you go. So there's proof positive that our mind is very coachable, trainable, malleable. We just have to take the lead and show it the way.
Yeah, and I mean that's not easy because a million times a day my brain's like, why don't you leave? You could go outside right now. Why are you sitting here working all day? Like all these things it's telling me to do. Like our brains often tell us things like bad things, I guess. Like I sometimes have negative thoughts, like weird things that come up. I'm able to let those go, but why do these things just pop into our brains? And what can we do about things that we don't like that are coming into our minds? Like, how can we stop it? How can we prevent it? Or how can we redirect it?
So just to finish up on the last topic about multitasking and distractions, the reason your brain wants to do that is because you get little dopamine hits every time that you focus on something new. It's novel, it's exciting, like who knows what that might be, right? And so we get these tiny little dopamine hits, and the brain wants to find the easiest rewards that it can find, and so it goes there. However, we can retrain the brain to get dopamine from concentration and focus and tying it to our values. So it's like, let's say that we don't want to be that type of person that gets easily distracted. We want to be able to focus. It's important to us to be able to concentrate, to do great work, to achieve. And we know we can't do that unless we focus and concentrate. So then we start to say, well, I want to be this type of person that achieves these things and that is able to focus and concentrate and do what I say I'm going to do, have integrity, be honest, be hardworking. Like, I don't want to be that person that just doesn't get anything done because I'm always distracted. And so then we start to build motivation around that, being true to our values and being the type of person that's important for us to be. And so what you're doing there is you're retraining your reward system in your brain to be motivated more deeply and intrinsically by doing things that are tied to your identity and your values versus, getting these cheap thrills by being distracted easily. Okay. So you actually can retrain your dopamine system, your reward system, to deliver dopamine only when you are aligning with your values and the identity that you want to have, and not get dopamine from these distractions. And so then your brain stops going there because there's no reward in it. Okay. So then to the topic you just asked about, if we have negative thoughts, negative emotions, the first thing that we need to th think about, be aware of, and consider is that we have trained the brain previously to think that way and feel that way. Okay. So that's the first thing is, giving grace to ourselves and grace to our brains and say, well, it's okay. It's just a pattern. It's not me. And I put it there and I repetitioned it. And so that's why my brain keeps bringing it back up to me, is because in its interest to conserve resources and energy and not to work very hard, it keeps going back to my memory bank and brings this one forward that I've practiced over and over again. So that's why it's happening. So that allows us to give grace and relax and get our nervous system calmed so that we're not like amped up over this, and we can be objective about it, impartial. So I like to look at my brain as a third, as a child, or as a third, as another person. It's like I like to separate myself from my brain and talk to it like in a relationship. And so it's not our fault and it's not the brain's fault that this is happening. It's just happening because we've practiced it and we've trained our brain to predict it. Okay. So then we then say, okay, it's not helpful. And then what we do is what, you and I are going to do in our next session is we start to break down these patterns. Where did they come from in our past? Why aren't they true anymore? Why aren't they helpful anymore? What is it costing us to keep thinking and feeling this way? If one of our friends was thinking and feeling this way, how would we advise them? And so what we try to do there is we try to break the hold that these patterns have on us, and we try to break our attachment to them. And so we go through these exercises to do that. And once we've loosened their grip on our psyche, then our brain starts to become more willing to consider new possibilities because we're not as attached to that one anymore. Okay. And so then we can then consciously construct a new way that we'd like to think and feel that's going to be more helpful, and that's in alignment to this new version of ourselves that we want to be. What are our values? How would this person that has my values and wants to live life the way that I want to live it, how would they think and feel in this situation? And then we design that new way, that new pattern, and it's going to feel weird because it's different and new. The brain doesn't understand it yet, but that's where we have to start to train the brain that this is how we're going to start doing it now. And then we have to reward it like a dog so that it will then start to want to pursue it. And the reward that we're going to give it is the fact that this new pattern is not negative anymore, and it's positive, and it has better emotions attached to it, has better thinking attached to it, and it's tied to our values. It's tied to this identity that we want for ourselves. And so then we have to kind of grunt our way through the practicing of it for a while until the brain starts to actually experience that reward. And so we're kind of leading it by the hand, faking it till we making it. And then gradually over time, just as the way that you figured out how to stop doing drugs and alcohol by whatever means necessary until you started to experience equal and greater reward from normal life activities again. You retrained your whole brain to move away from the reward of the drugs and alcohol into the reward of something more meaningful and purposeful, the way that you wanted to be, the person you wanted to be. That's why you were able to do it, is because the reward you were getting from living a better life in accordance with the person that Lisa truly wanted to be, that was meaningful to her at a deep, deep level, turned out to be more rewarding than the rewards you were getting from the drugs and the alcohol. And that's finally what got you to stay there, is that your brain recognized, okay, this is healthier, I feel better, I feel in alignment with who Lisa wants us to be. I'm getting all kinds of other feel-good chemicals like serotonin and endorphins that are happening because I'm actually being the person that I truly want to be deep down inside. So, that's the process that's involved in change. And again, it's hard because the brain hasn't experienced it yet. It wants to conserve energy. It's easier for it to just go grab something it already knows. And so we have to, with conscious effort that's energy intensive, we have to, with willpower, force ourselves. In your case, you drove a different route. As hard as that was, you did it with willpower until your brain experienced enough reward from this other way of being, until it became easier. And then your brain stopped. I'm sure you remember, your brain stopped going for when the triggers would happen, your brain would stop going to drugs and alcohol for a solution, and it went to other things as the solution, right? You like now, I'm sure I know myself, like my brain doesn't like if I get stressed out, the thing I would immediately go for drugs and alcohol for before doesn't even occur to me anymore because my brain has been retrained to seek reward, and it goes and grabs other memories now because I've created a bunch of new good ones. It goes and grabs those instead of the horrible drugs and alcohol ones that had a bunch of bad consequences. So it's learned through practice that there are other solutions that are more beneficial and more rewarding to me than the drugs and alcohol were, and that's why it goes and keeps grabbing those.
Yeah, absolutely. Took a long time, but yeah, definitely. I don't ever think that way, but it gets easier and easier and easier. And I think that's the message here is it does get easier. Where can we find you and your coaching program and all that fun stuff?
Yeah, so come follow me on LinkedIn at George Haymaker. I'm on Facebook. I'm on YouTube. There's a lot of good coaching videos on YouTube. And I have a website, georgehaymaker.com. And there's a link there for a free discovery call where people can schedule some free time to chat about brain science and what's going on with them and to see, if we're a good fit to work together. And if not, we can, just be friends and, make an acquaintance, make a friend with each other.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, life is better in pairs, in doubles, in all the things. So create a community. Do you have any last minute thoughts from our episode today?
Yeah, it's just about, your brain. I hope everybody at the end of today's episode looks at their brain a little differently. You are not, you're your brain in the sense that you have trained it to be what it is, but you can train it to be something else. And so please try to look at your brain objectively as an entity that you can partner with and work with in order to make whatever life you want to make and deliver whatever mental experience you want to deliver for yourself. So it's through neuroplasticity, the brain is changeable, adaptable, and evolvable. You just have to take the lead on making that happen.
Beautiful. It was really great chatting with you today.
And you as well, Lisa.
Yeah, do you
It's
have any plans for the weekend?
well, my wife's coming home from Mexico, so I'm sure she's got plans for me. So I'm gonna keep an open schedule and wait and see what that holds.
You got to clean the house now, don't you?
Yeah, good point. That's what I'm gonna do right after we hang up.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, I won't keep you then.
Okay.
It was awesome seeing you. I hope you have a great weekend. And to our audience, you as well. Thank you for tuning in. It's really, really important to remember that we can retrain our brains. And you just heard it straight from George Haymaker, who specializes in this. So please reach out to him with the links we will provide in the show notes. Until next time, my name is Lisa Urbanski with The Advisor. Go train those brains, you guys. Bye.